Up North News with our daily newsletter. Go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click newsletter on the top banner. Once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
Welcome back to the second hour of Up North News for this Monday, October 24th. A beautiful morning, sun peeking through after the rain went through on Lake Wissota. And as that front continues to move through, temperatures are actually going to drop in some areas today. I know here on Lake Wissota, we're 3-4 degrees cooler than we were a couple hours back. Same can be said for several places around the state. And it's going to be windy. South wind at 15, gusting to 35. So still a little bit above normal with temps in the 60s, but starting to fall. A great day to have the north-facing windows open, not the south-facing ones unless you want everything blowing inside. And then we get a couple of days of quiet weather in the 50s, and then maybe a slight chance of showers later up on Thursday, or cloudy in some parts of the state as well. I am joined now by Brad Paff, the state senator and candidate for Congress in the 3rd Congressional District along the western part of the state, parts of central Wisconsin, for an election that takes place just 15 days from now. Senator Paff, good morning.
Good morning, Pat. What a, it's the time is getting away. Here we come. It is October's moving to November, and people are out voting early right now. So it's the fall election is in high gear.
That's right. And yeah, I mean, I haven't seen today's number yet, but I dare say we're close to 200,000 people statewide who have voted already. In-person absentee voting begins tomorrow in pretty much all municipalities around the state, but check with your local election clerk for details. So with those ballots already starting to come in, Brad, you're doing two things here. You're doing both get out the vote early for people who are supporting you, okay, and still trying to reach that segment of the population, which I always divide into two. It's not that many people are undecided. It's they're undecided whether to vote or not. And you were quoted in the New York Times story yesterday about reaching out to those folks, that there is still work to do to convince them that in a close race like this, despite all the other bad news and division that's out there, that everybody's vote still has value.
It sure does. And Pat, quite frankly, this is a values-based campaign. I mean, the voters of this district have a real clear choice come November 8th. They can choose a candidate that's all about chaos, someone who's not from this district, moved into this district for the sole purpose of running for political office, doesn't understand the people or the communities of this district, doesn't share our values, doesn't understand our way of life. Someone who's, is a bully, who sexually harassed women. He wrote about that in a book. He's part of that January 6th, very shameful, awful, deadly day in which 5 police officers lost their lives in Washington, D.C., and tens of millions of dollars of public damage took place in our nation's capital. I mean, that's a candidate of a major political party who's running for office here in western and central Wisconsin. And then there's me. And I will be the first one to admit, I'm not always the most hip person in the world. If you talk to my children, but what you'll find is someone who's got deep, deep roots in this district, understands the people and communities of this district, and quite frankly, will go to Washington, D.C. to do what the people of this district ask to be done, and that is to make sure that we can continue to get our fair share, and that we will make sure that this area is not overlooked and left behind. With Derry Van Orden, what you're going to get is you're going to get more of a clown show. And we quite frankly do not need that, Pat. There's so much more work that needs to be done here to make sure that the people of this district get our fair share. And the last thing that we want is we want a member of Congress who's going to go to Washington, D.C. and make it all about himself and just be part of that carnival act that's taking place.
It takes me to this question, which is about actual positions on issues. And you have certainly, done the right things in telling people in the district what you stand for, what your values are, what you would do so that your votes represent things that help the people in western Wisconsin. For Derek Van Orden, I'm certainly as guilty as anybody in focusing on how he would simply be an acolyte for, Donald Trump and, mm-hmm. and everything else like that. But we haven't talked nearly enough, I feel like, the positions, the actual votes that he would take on things, and whether those votes will be on things that are helpful or harmful to western Wisconsin.
Oh, I think you're absolutely right, Pat. The thing is he doesn't want to talk about the issues. What he wants to do is he wants to just talk about the presidency, or he wants to talk about the president's job approval, or he wants to talk about Speaker Pelosi. He doesn't want to focus on the issues here. Pat, where is he on Social Security? Where is he on the future of Social Security? Minority Leader Scalise, Assistant Minority Leader Scalise last week said that that would be on the chopping block during the debt ceiling negotiations. Social Security, where is Derek Van Orden? Why isn't he speaking out on this? Where is Derek Van Orden when it comes to capping costs for insulin? Where is he against the prescription drug companies, the big pharmaceutical companies? Where is he on these very important issues that matter to all the people here in this district, rebuilding our manufacturing sector? Where is he when it comes to making sure that we can get that mill open again in Wisconsin Rapids, that paper mill? He's silent. He doesn't know where to stand on these issues because he's not from here. He doesn't share our values. And again, he's funded by outside special dark money, money from the swamp. That's who funds him. And that's unfortunate, Pat. So there's a lot that needs to be still determined yet as far as we're learning about Derek Van Orden.
Well, which would be a lot easier if he would actually agree to a typical, normal, traditional debate where we could learn things from him. But we are still not able to get that from Derek Van Orden, the Republican nominee. We're talking to Brad Path, the Democratic nominee in the 3rd Congressional District, and we'll continue that conversation in 2 minutes. You're up north. Candidate for Congress in Wisconsin's 3rd Congressional District on this Monday morning. We're up north news. State Senator Brad Path was previously the Wisconsin Secretary of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection before a maneuver that I don't know that I could use the words on the radio to describe what happened, but he then took that setback and turned it into winning an election representing Western Wisconsin in the state Senate and being able especially to represent the many farmers and other people related to ag production in his state Senate district. Now in running for Congress in what is still an area with heavy with dairy farming and then farming overall, I still feel like that whole topic has received short shrift because there will be a farm bill that's debated next year by Congress, whoever is controlling Congress. And, a farm bill is very thick. It's very comprehensive. It covers a whole lot of areas. Beginners need not apply. And so here we have a former state ag secretary on the ballot. Brad, if elected, what should people know about where you're going to be on these farm bill debates versus your opponent?
Well, first of all, I will serve on the House Agriculture Committee. I think it's extremely important that a member from Western and Central Wisconsin serve on that important committee. The important thing here, Pat, to know is this, is we all recognize the fact that agriculture continues to change. And there's consolidation that's taking place within agriculture. There's fewer and fewer farmers on the land. But that doesn't mean that agriculture doesn't play such a tremendous economic as well as cultural and heritage impact that it has upon this district. And so the real thing that people need to understand is, it's one thing to go to Washington, D.C. and to take a vote. It's another thing to be in Washington, D.C. and actually understand the men and women that are getting up every morning and feeding the calves and milking the cows and are actually trying to get the corn and soybeans harvested during weather like this. And understand the day-to-day plights of the people. I can honestly say that I understand it. I know what is happening and what people are thinking on the farm right now and what they're looking for. And so, I would say this. As a member of Congress, I will be a leader on the House Agriculture Committee. I will do everything I can to find new markets for products, may they be international or may they be local markets. I will do everything I can to fix a tax code to make sure that the next generation of farmers can enter the profession and that we can have an intergenerational transfer from the parents to the son or their daughter to the farm. All that is so very, very important. But probably the most important thing that I bring, Pat, is I bring an understanding. an understanding of the day-to-day struggles, the day-to-day concerns, the day-to-day hopes of what our rural residents and our family farmers look for. Now, Derek Van Horn, you know, he's masquerading. He's masquerading as someone who understands this. He's taking outside money from, you know, big special interest groups that don't have the interest of our family farmers at heart. And rather than trying to bring us together and talk about the issues that are important, you know, Derek Van Horn is all about, you know, rhetoric that divides us. And that is unfortunate. And so I can just say this, Pat, as I look forward to, as a member of Congress, coming on your show and doing a Q&A back and forth with you to talk about issues that matter, including agriculture, as well as rural health care, and what we can do to make sure that, you know, our rural residents feel that they're being heard and represented.
You know, about a week ago, we received and published a column from two retired moderate Republicans, former Congressman Steve Gunderson from the 3rd Congressional District and former State Senator Dale Schultz, who was Republican leader in the Wisconsin legislature for a time. And in this column that you can find over at upnorthnewswi.com, they talk about the need for bipartisanship as the better path than ideological obstruction for solving today's challenges. And they write, it's awfully easy to just say no and take your ball and go home, but that's not the Western Wisconsin way. To paraphrase the 20th century humorist H.L. Mencken, for every complex problem, there's at least one solution that's simple, neat, and wrong. Indeed, obstructionism solves nothing. And they go on to talk about the things that they were able to do, for example, the Upper Mississippi River watershed, for recreational, environmental, and commercial uses of the area, taking care of areas that had to recover from flooding in the Mississippi area. And they didn't take a stand in this race, Brad, necessarily, but in a way, I kind of think they did, in that they say, we are writing to our many friends and neighbors to encourage them to choose public servants who, as our Wisconsin state motto suggests, will move our state and citizens forward through connection and collaboration. Indeed, both our republic and its democratic system of government may well depend on electing people who possess and practice these qualities. Remember, when our democracy works, we can address the problems facing us, we can move beyond polarization to solutions, and we can build a brighter future for everyone. Brad, kind words from people who were known leaders during the times they served. I have to wonder if those are words of inspiration or if those are words that look back at a bygone era.
Well, that's a great question, Pat, and I want to say it's inspiration, but I do recognize the fact that we are living in a more polarized political environment, it seems like, than ever before. But, Pat, you served in the legislature. You know the big, important things that we're able to get done in a bipartisan manner, because what that means is it has support across the political spectrum, and you know, we can make sure that we can move forward as a state and a nation on issues in which we have found agreement on. That's not easy. That is not easy. The easy thing to do is just to, again, take the ball, go home if you don't get what you want. The easy thing to do is just put out talking points to say where you stand on a particular issue. And if the opposition doesn't meet you 100% of what you want, then you're going to say no. That isn't going to solve the day-to-day problems that we have here in the Chippewa Valley, in central Wisconsin, in Wisconsin Rapids, trying to rebuild our manufacturing, make sure we open up our mill. That's not going to solve the issues of prescription drug prices that we have here in southwestern Wisconsin. It's going to take bipartisan effort to do it. Now, that doesn't mean that, you know, as an elected official, that you don't hold your own. But that also means that you do reach across the aisle and try and find common ground where you can find common ground. It means that you have an open mind on issues. It means that you're reaching all of the voters of your district. Pat, my primary concern with Derek Van Horn is this. He is so partisan. He is so extreme. Is he only going to do casework that assists the people that voted for him? If somebody is contacting his congressional office and has a question regarding passports or help with Social Security disability, and that individual voted for a Democrat, voted for me, is he going to serve that constituent or is he going to pass it on? Is he going to make sure that he reaches out and has public listening sessions where everyone can attend, not just by invitation only like he's doing right now, where everybody can attend? Or is he just going to invite those that voted for him? That's the concern that I have. Hey, Pat, you served, Congressman Gunderson served, as did State Senator Dale Schultz. I mean, they represented districts that have a variety of different political perspectives and ideologies, but you were out there. You were in the community. You were hearing firsthand from the people of the district. And that's the job. It's not an easy job, but it's a job that you're elected to do. And my concern with Derrick Van Orden is that he's got all this outside dark money, money from the swamp, money from people that don't have an interest in this district. He's just going to get elected, and he is going to be a gimme vote for the far right extreme. And he's not going to serve the people in the interest of this very large geographic and very large economic diverse district. And it concerns me. So, yes, I pledge that, you know, I will continue to lead with Western Wisconsin values. And I pledge that I will do everything I can where appropriate to make sure that this district gets its fair share, and that where appropriate, we'll work in a bipartisan manner.
Well, and of course, Congressman Gunderson and State Senator Schultz were the leaders, you know, when it came to representing Wisconsin's agriculture industry. And, you know, it's easy to be simplistic about it and just say, you know, talk tough on China. Mm. It takes a lot more work to do the shades of gray to, you know, juggle the multiple different issues that would, you know, help an area, whether it's, you know, the infrastructure or helping, you know, small meat processors so that they can find new markets, or the help with environmental grants so that, you know, farms aren't polluting so much, and on and on. That's it right. Goes that, again, you've seen each little bit that together right. adds up to something, as opposed to the one encompassing, you know, be tough with China or spend right. less or, you know, whatever else sounds good. That's right. on a bumper sticker, but doesn't get the work done at home.
It's not going to get the work done at home. And I really don't know, Pat, if he has the interest of doing the work here at home. I really think he's more interested in his national profile. I think he's more interested in being part of that get-along gang out in Washington, D.C., which is all about tearing this country apart. It's all about divisiveness. It's all about rhetoric that divides rather than bringing people together. I don't think he has any interest at all as far as what's happening right now on, you know, Barstow Street in Eau Claire, or what's happening right now in Wisconsin Rapids. I don't think that he's focusing on those interests at all. I think he's more interested in how he can fit in with Marjorie Taylor Greene and Lauren Boebert, and they can throw the most extreme partisan barbs out there to try and get attention.
As you're talking to folks, I'm sure that it runs the range that was seen, you know, in the New York Times story, and that there are people who all they've ever heard is the big lie. And so that's what they believe to be the case out there. But I would think you're still running into people who maybe you and I would look at them and think, oh, I'm sure they're voting, but in reality, they might not be voting yet. And is that your main audience for the next 15 days here?
It really is. I mean, my main audience is this, Pat, is that you know, this nation's having a conversation about what January 6th meant. And, you know, obviously, you know, that was a day that I hope is never repeated. But this district is one of three districts in the nation in which someone who participated in that shameful, awful, deadly day is on the ballot. And, you know, we can have a conversation as a nation what January 6th meant to our democracy. But this district, hardworking, honest, God-fearing, patriotic people here in Western and Central Wisconsin, to have as their member of Congress someone who was part of that shameful, awful, deadly day, I mean, that just does not fit with the values, the ethics, the morals of the people that we know in this district. So, you know, I'm going to continue to point out the fact that, you know, we cannot have someone representing us who was part of that. Because to me, that January 6th was a window into Derrick Van Orden's soul. I mean, his behavior on January 6th, his being there, just demonstrates the fact that he does not represent who we are. So I'm going to continue to paint a larger picture, but then I'm also going to continue to remind people of my deep roots in this district.
Mm-hmm. We are joined by Brad Paff, the Democratic nominee for Congress. And before we go to break, because we just have a couple of seconds here, so I'm just going to editorialize on my own for a moment here, because I am taken aback by coming off of what Senator Paff just said. People who were quoted, who live near Aliva, who talked about January 6th, saying, in reality, do you think those people were really going to overthrow the government? Really, he said, was Trump ever really going to not leave office? You know he would. Sir, with all due respect, you could not be more wrong on both counts, which is why we're talking about this with Brad Paff and so many others for the next 15 days. And we'll continue this conversation in just a bit. You're up north.
Information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. You're listening to Up North News. Don't
care. Still hanging out in the mid 60s across the state here, 68 degrees here at Lake Wissota, Richland Center 66, Oshkosh 62 in light rain, Wausau is at 64. Amory, you're listening to Lake Air, and it's 68 degrees there. Lows will be getting into the 30s, not tonight, but starting tomorrow night for the next couple of days. So enjoy today, breezy as it is, while it lasts, once the rain moves past your area. State Senator Brad Paff joins us this hour. He's the Democratic nominee for Congress, running in the 3rd Congressional District, where Ron Kind is retiring after 26 years in office. I was talking, Brad, with the listeners about the New York Times article that put a spotlight on this district and the whole state in its Sunday morning paper. And I couldn't help but notice, as we take in another issue here, but not the one you think at first, it quotes Peter Fluck, age 61, a retired police officer from Ashwaubenon. Mm-hmm. He sees a failure of governments to protect their citizens and a breakdown of the rule of law as representing the unraveling of democratic control. Mr. Fluck, an independent, said he would probably vote for Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes and Governor Evers, though not because of all the democracy talk. In the end, he said, he is most worried about his two daughters losing their right to choose an abortion. And that really sums up how voters are being asked to juggle many different things here. The concern about democracy or the lies they're hearing about it, the choice for themselves or their daughters and their health care. Then you certainly have all of the concerns about gun violence and everything. I'm not saying that every election isn't like this, but I actually don't envy voters right now, at least especially the ones who maybe don't watch a lot of news, they don't like a lot of politics, but they do want to participate. But I can hear a lot of them saying, there's just so much going on right now. How do you help them prioritize?
Well, I mean, first of all, I understand what that resident from Ashwaubenon is saying, and I hear it every single day out here. First of all, let's just talk about law and order. I mean, when it comes to this campaign for Congress, it couldn't be more clear. There's only one of us that's on probation for trying to get on an airplane with a loaded handgun. And it's not me. There's only one of us that was out in Washington, D.C. during that shameful, awful, deadly day in which 5 police officers were killed. Hundreds of police officers were injured. And millions of dollars, tens of millions of dollars of public property was damaged. It surely wasn't me. It was Derek Van Orden. And as far as talking about law and order, I mean, Derek Van Orden is a narcissistic bully that marched into a public library and verbally harassed a teenage librarian aide. Over a book display that he disagreed with. I mean, this is not somebody that is about law and order. And then, you know, as a state senator, I'm proud of the fact that I voted to increase shared revenue so our local municipalities will have that money that they need. And we should have done more. We should have done a lot more. But unfortunately, my colleagues in the state legislature stood in the way to make sure that these growing communities out here that are looking for greater assistance from the state of Wisconsin when it comes to funding for police training, as well as for public safety, they stood in the way. Then they have the audacity to try and claim that they're all about law and order. Wow, the people here in Western and Central Wisconsin surely know better when it comes to Derek Van Orden. But we have to remind them of that. Now, when it comes to choice, Without a doubt. Pat, let me be absolutely clear. Kansas and what happened in the state of Kansas was not a one-off. You could travel this district, this rural district, and you are going to hear from women of all ages, men as well, that what happened with Samuel Alito in the U.S. Supreme Court decision was an extreme overreach. This is not, we are not in this state. Nobody wants to go back to 1849. Nobody wants the Supreme Court justices, Samuel Alito and Clarence Thomas, to be telling women how they're what decisions they should be making. Absolutely not. And I will tell you, all this national media that keeps talking about the fact that this is no longer an important issue, I invite them to come out here and meet the people that I'm talking to and to share, to hear firsthand what people on the ground are thinking. I mean, this is an extreme, extreme overreach where the U.S. Supreme Court is going. And I'm telling you, I am leaning in to the fact that I will protect individual rights. I will protect individual freedoms. And I am the law and order candidate. If you want to talk about Derrick Van Orden, who is so, so outside of the mainstream, that this guy is on probation for trying to get on an airplane with a loaded handgun. Pat, can you imagine? Can you imagine in years past what would have happened, you know, if we would have a candidate as extreme as Derrick Van Orden? This guy is not mainstream.
No, and it's testimony. It's testimony as well to the reduced number of moderates who choose to stand and run, because you see a Republican Party that has continued to get more extreme, that has purged itself of its moderate members. There's first off a Steve Gunderson, you know, or Senator Dale Schultz. Mm-hmm. There's no way they would be nominated and elected today if they were new on the scene. But I would go a step further and say, if either of them ran right now, they would hear the same message that Tommy Thompson did when he considered running recently. And it would be that this party is now led by extremists who are going to say, your time has passed and you know, more needs to be done, more meaning, you know, extreme positions taken. And that this is not... This is what Republican voters have to face, especially Republican-leaning voters have to face, is whether they still recognize this party and if they still see it in Derrick Van Orden and even Ron Johnson, for that matter.
That's right, Pat. That's absolutely right. And that's the question that I'm asking the voters. And I would go back to what we talked about in the first part of your show. This really is a values-based race. And, you know, I am leaning into values. I am leaning into Western and Central Wisconsin values, the values of right versus wrong, the values versus, you know, figuring out how we can get along with one another, even though we don't always agree with one another, recognizing the fact that, you know, we're in this together as a community. I am going back to Western and Central Wisconsin values of hard work, dedication, resilience, and the fact that we're God-fearing, patriotic Americans. And what happened on January 6th is the most unpatriotic thing that could ever happen. And for somebody like Derrick Van Orden, who swore an oath to the Constitution to be part of that on January 6th, now he thinks he's going to go to Washington, D.C. and represent all of our interests? Well, as you and I have talked about in the past, he doesn't have the capability to do that. My fear is if he gets elected, he is only going to represent those people that voted for him. And he is not going to be doing casework for people that did not vote for him, even though they may need assistance when it comes to Social Security disability. They may need assistance when it comes to a farm bill policy. He's not going to be having public town hall meetings, which he's going to invite us all in, and we all have an opportunity to share our thoughts and our ideas with our member of Congress. He's not going to do that. Instead, what he's going to have is invitation only, quite frankly, invitation only just to his big donors. Now, Pat, don't get me wrong. I understand that there's concern out there by people. They want Washington to do a better job. They feel that Washington is not representing them or not hearing them. But you do not elect... Let me say this. You do not hire an arsonist to put out a fire. The last thing you're going to do is elect an insurrectionist to save democracy. That is not the path in order to make sure that this district gets its fair share and the people of this district are heard.
Let's turn. We've talked about rural voters. We've talked about voters who might lean Republican. And we've certainly talked about, you know, people who feel very pressed into action by the Dobbs decision. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about a different type of voter that does not get nearly the coverage they probably should, especially this year. And in your case, your district, the 3rd Congressional District, is uniquely qualified in that in or near the district is UW River Falls, UW Stout, UW Eau Claire, UW Stevens Point, UW La Crosse, UW Platteville, and a host of two-year senators as well. Right. And these are voters who have already seen what President Biden has done in forgiving some of the student loan debt of people who were students before them. So attacking the problems of affordable higher education, the moves that he's made to decriminalize marijuana. Now, while, again, a president is not on the ballot in the midterms, it is when, you know, voters essentially give that president and his party a report card. Mm-hmm. And so for those voters of that age and in and around those areas, what's your message to them about going down ballot and paying attention to your race?
Well, thank you. That's a great question, Pat, and thanks for asking. We do have four UW universities in this district. We have over 45,000 undergraduates. We have as many undergraduates in this congressional district that they have at UW-Madison. The thing is that they want to be heard. And as you mentioned, their primary issues are making sure that we as a nation recognize the importance of the changing climate and to build an economy that recognizes that, you know, we can succeed. Economy rely completely on petroleum-based fuels. They're also extremely, extremely focused on reproductive rights and on personal privacy. They're very, very concerned about the Alito decision that came out of the U.S. Supreme Court. And you are right. When it comes to the overall affordability of higher education, that is something that we have to tackle. And we have to get to the root of the problem. We need to recognize the fact that the cost right now for technical college education, as well as a four-year higher education, it has exceeded what working families can afford. You know, I'm a first generation off the farm. And, you know, my first semester in college, now this was many, many years ago, Pat, this was back in the fall of 1986, for 15 credits, I paid $560. Now, you know, it's nine times that right now. I mean, it is ridiculous, the cost of this. So, you know, I recognize the fact that as a member of Congress, you have to get in on these issues. You have to really get in and get at the root of this problem. But you also need to recognize the fact that we can't continue to have a situation where students are graduating with tens of thousands of dollars worth of debt. I mean, that is something that is just not sustainable moving forward long term. You know, I recognize right now that an appellate court, federal appellate court, has blocked what's taking place there. My problem that I have right now with the Republicans is they do not have an answer. All they want to do is blame. They don't have an answer. And that is what is so extremely frustrating. Do we have to fix the student loan problem in this country? Yes. Do we have to figure out what the role of the federal government is going to be when it comes to student loan? Yes. You know, but the thing is, just to say no, just to blame the president, just to say we're not going to do anything, I mean, that is walking away from the responsibility and duties of an elected member of Congress.
We got 2 minutes left. Last thing I wanted to get to, since we talked about higher education and college students, is to note that there are also plenty of people, young people and people looking for second careers, who are also in need of training and skills.
Oh, yes.
All the new jobs that are going to be created by the Bipartisan Infrastructure Act. And again, are they going to see in you somebody who supports all level of education and training, not just the colleges?
Oh, that's, thank you, Pat, for bringing that up. That, absolutely. In fact, we're well positioned here in Western and Central Wisconsin with our technical college system and with our strong, you know, private businesses that we have that build partnerships when it comes to mentorship and apprenticeship. You know, as a state senator, I serve on the Higher Education Committee, and one of the things I've strong advocates long time advocated for was dual enrollment, where you could have someone who would be in high school at the same time taking diesel mechanic courses or other type of technical skills training courses within our two-year technical, as well as taking some four-year education classes.
Seems like a creative approach and different kinds of ideas that could actually be useful coming from a member of Congress. State Senator Brad Paff, running in the 3rd Congressional District. Great to catch up with you. We'll try to do it one more time before we get to election, just 15 days away.
Thank you, Pat. Thanks for everything. And thank you to the listeners. I hope you're doing well. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Brad. We will take our final break, wrap up this hour's conversation coming up in just a bit. Remember, you can subscribe to our daily newsletter by going to upnorthnewswi.com, clicking on newsletter in the top banner. We'll be back. You're Up North. Not a lot of times you're going to hear us play Kanye, but since we're doing this day in musical history, it was 2 years ago today that Kanye West, in an interview with Zane Lowe for Apple Music Beats 1, Kanye West declared that he was, quote, unquestionably, undoubtedly, the greatest human artist of all time. Which is, you know, not a bad thing to put on your business card if it were true. The 42-year-old rapper at the time, 2 years ago, predicted that he will one day be president of the United States, and he defended his support of Donald Trump. As we would learn later on, Kanye would, in fact, attempt to launch an independent campaign for president, meant to siphon votes away from Joe Biden and assist the Donald Trump reelection campaign. And that didn't work out so well, in part because Kanye's people couldn't tell time and missed a key deadline in Wisconsin to get on the primary election ballot there. So I would say that there are a few people out there, Aaron, who believe that Kanye West is unquestionably, undoubtedly the greatest human artist of all time. I don't know if I can count them on two hands, but I don't think that that boast has necessarily stood the test of time.
I would definitely say that even at the time he said it, people I know who like listened to Kanye, they just laughed with the rest of us.
Well, and you know, and he is kind of in that Herschel Walker area of people who are just you're concerned about their welfare. And yet they're also in positions of great fame or fortune or attention or power or media exposure. And we have learned a lot, or maybe we haven't learned a lot about the perils of celebrity. And also what happens when you put too much stock into celebrity. You end up voting for celebrities to become president of the United States or governor. I recall the night that Jesse the Body Ventura was elected governor of Minnesota. I want to say it was 1998. And we were otherwise covering plenty of Wisconsin election results on Channel 13 that night in Eau Claire. And I think we did our last update at 11:30 that night. And I probably was never more dumbfounded on the air than, you know, looking at the wires and having to tell people, I can't believe I'm sharing this news with you, but the Minnesota election for governor has just been called for Jesse Ventura. Now, that's not to say that he can't run for office, that celebrities aren't worthy of the office or what have you. But what you saw after, you know, Ventura's time as governor of Minnesota was a period of sustained gridlock, because again, a celebrity tends to think of themselves as a party of one. That's definitely what you see in Donald Trump. Look how often he refers to the Republicans as a separate entity. He realizes that he is a party of one, in that it's all about his personality, his celebrity. Everybody there following him, if asked to choose here right now, you either stick with Trump, but you can no longer call yourself a Republican, or you are a Republican, but you can no longer associate with Trump. That is a bridge too far for the people who are in what I think can fairly be called a cult of personality at this point. And I think that that's not an unfair description, because you have so much faith and belief in disinformation, in things that, you know, could not be better scripted by, you know, Russian dictator Vladimir Putin and others, in terms of casting aspersions on, you know, democracy in the United States, in U.S. election results, in exacerbating the divisions that are out there, you know, in wanting to paint the opposing party, in this case, you know, Democrats, as something they're not. Yeah, we see continually that they like to paint Democrats as doing nothing other than talking about groups, communities of color, LGBTQ, you know, other minority groups, other vulnerable groups who have not had a voice previously. Well, to say that just because you're open to and giving voice to a dynamic and diverse range of opinions, again, doesn't mean you can't walk and chew gum at the same time. For those blue-collar workers, those, you know, white Reagan Democrats who said, well, the Democratic Party left me. No, they never did. You just chose to pay attention more to when Republicans were claiming that's what the Democratic Party was doing, without keeping your eye on the ball and seeing that the Democratic Party all that time was still fighting for fair wages, for better working conditions, for a better tax climate that's out there. They were doing both, but Republicans knew the only way that they could claw back any of what has come to be known as the white working class, the only way to claw that back was to exacerbate, you know, racial tensions, or make them feel like victims, that, you know, the Democratic Party is not paying attention to you anymore. When in fact, again, if you go back and look at the positions of what's being promoted, if you look at the positions in terms of a record of accomplishments, I could not get over the analysis of the Biden presidency in the newspapers over the weekend as well, talking about the roller coasters and the many ups and downs and the failings, when any clear-eyed view would show you a record of achievement that hasn't been seen in, again, half a century or more of the things that, you know, Biden was able to get through, not just a divided Congress, but even a divided Democratic caucus, to the point where just one or two of them could cause real dysfunction. You know, Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema didn't do anybody any favors by being the impediments they were for as long as they were. But in the end, you still had a Democratic president and a Democratic Congress running on things that pretty much any middle-class worker, any middle-class voter could look at and say, now those are the people who are fighting for me. Now you turn to Trump or any of the folks in his wing of the Republican Party, or frankly, pretty much any Republican running, and ask this question: what will you do for me? And if the answer is only to re-air a list of grievances about, oh, they paid too much attention to LGBTQ people, or they spent too much time talking about the climate, without focusing on what was really accomplished for you, well, then that's a win for Republican messaging. And that's what we're facing in the final 15 days before the election, is will people look at who has actually been working for them and who will work for them, or are they going to listen to the airing of grievances because they sound good, but they don't necessarily reflect reality, and in some cases, don't reflect reality at all. More headlines and other conversation in our 10 o'clock hour coming up next. You're up north.